This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Put it together for the boys and the girls, children of the world. Look forward to a future, remember.
FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valensky.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, it's the fourth Monday, so the second hour of tonight's program is J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. This month, J.D. takes a musical look at the 1920s and 30s. It was during that time in nightclubs in the country's major cities that openly gay performers experienced a surge in popularity called the Pansy Craze. But first, June is Pride Month, and guess what? We're almost there. Brian Scott Rydell from Houston Arch and Eric Shanks of Pride Houston will be here to discuss activities and planning related to Pride. And we also have news wrap and the feature segments from This Way Out.
Yes, but first, this is our last week in the spring marathon to ask you for money. Of course, you can donate to KPFT at any time by going to kpft.org, but we really want to make our goal tonight. It's very important. We want to show that this show is listened to, that it's supported by the community, because it's the community is that what keeps KPFT alive. You know, we just celebrated our 40th anniversary of being bombed off the air the first time. We are celebrating the fact that KPFT is still here after 40 years. We're celebrating the fact that this is a grassroots radio station. So we're doing lots of celebrating in anticipation of Pride Month, which will be starting in the next 8 days, along with hurricane season and all that other wonderful stuff. But, you know we have listeners out there, and we know it's tough times out there, but if you could possibly donate, if you can help the station out, help out what is helping you out in the community, the show that is for and about the GLBT community here in Houston. We're asking you to pledge now. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
And do you think that a gay radio is necessary?
I do. And if you're out there listening and you like our show and you tune in every week, we need you to call in now and show your support. Our radio management, station management, is out there looking at what shows are getting the calls and what are the listeners feeding back to the show. So 713-526-5738. We actually have people out there ready to answer the phones. And you can vote by calling in and saying, I like the show, and just give a little bit. It doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, the price of maybe a cup of coffee for a week, what does that add up to? You know, just pledge that and give it to the Queer Voices and Gay Radio in Houston. Or you can do it online, kpft.org. If you're not in Houston and you're listening through our live streaming webcast, kpft.org, you can do it online with a credit card.
Or if you're listening in the future.
Yes.
We're listening to iTunes because our show is on there. You can also go to KPFT Archives and download our show because not everybody can be up at this hour at night or they're doing other stuff. And that way you can listen to at your leisure. So you can always donate by going to kpft.org. And we do get some of those. Actually, probably about 30-40% of the people that pledge to this show do it online at some other time than when we're on.
And I think that's an important point, Jack. We need to designate that this is for Queer Voices. You're calling and say it's tomorrow and you're listening to it at work when you should be working. You're listening to the podcast. Just call in or pledge online at that time and pledge to Queer Voices. That shows where the station that the money is going to this radio program and that it is supported and that you are out there listening and supporting Gay Radio in Houston.
And next week we'll be back to regular programming where we'll just reminding you that if you made a pledge to fulfill it, but we'll be back with our regular scheduled full show devoted to the community. And this week we're just going to be interrupting as, you know, if the phones start ringing, we can move on with the show. So we're asking you to pick up the phone, call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT or kpft.org, and you can make us secure a donation online, and we would really, really appreciate it. So let's play a piece of music, and then we'll get right to our show.
is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jack Valinsky.
And we are imminently approaching June, which we know as Pride Month. And we're kind of doing a two-for-one special tonight. We have two great community organizations in the studio tonight with us, Houston Arch and Pride Houston. We have Eric Skanes from Pride Houston and Brian Riedel from Houston Arch. Welcome, guys.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
I think we mispronounced your name.
You just got it right. It's perfect.
Brian Riedel, like the needle.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. June is coming, and I guess let's kind of start with the historical perspective and go with Houston Arch. What does ARCH mean?
Okay, ARCH is an acronym, and it stands for Area Rainbow Collective History. It's a consortium of a whole bunch of individuals and organizations in Houston.
You
some
had
of
a
which
stretch
you may know.
With that, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, we kind of need to work on that thing, because we like a name that says what we are, and it arches and encompasses everybody. So GCAM, which you may have heard of, the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum, the Botts Collection, at Resurrection MCC, Rice University, University of Houston, and the Transgender Foundation of America Archive. They're all part of this good consortium that preserves Houston's LGBT history.
Now, why do we need to preserve this history?
I could think of a lot of reasons, but I think maybe the slogan for Pride Houston itself has something to do with that commemorate, celebrate, and educate part that's part of the mission of Pride Houston. That's part of why we need to do it, because we shouldn't really forget what's happened to help us be where we are today, so that we can have, say, several people in city council, a one-time city controller who becomes mayor. These things don't just happen overnight. They have a history to them, and we need to remember that.
That is a great segue into Pride. And before we get too far off on the beaten path, I know that Pride is doing a special history tent. They're adding to it this year. Is that right, Eric?
Yeah, we're adding to it this year. We're bringing the LGBT art exhibit. It's going to be added to it, where we're getting together LGBT artists and giving them a free space to showcase their work and get more involved and get people involved in the work that the community does.
Very good. So it's kind of an expansion of the historical, like the old magazines, the Twits, but now we have art from local artists in the tent.
Correct.
So that sounds it'll be cultural and fun.
Yeah, it'll be separated into two sections. So when you go into the tent, you'll definitely see a difference. You know, you'll definitely know you're in the art section of the pavilion, and then you'll notice a stark difference when you go into the history side.
Now, is the tent air conditioned?
Yes, it will be air conditioned.
That is the best place to go if you go to the Pride. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Pride Festival. Is when exactly?
On June the 26th.
So it's the day of the parade, but during the day.
Yes, it begins at 12 p.m., runs until 7.
And it's near the parade side.
Right, it's right. The History Pavilion will be located on Commonwealth, right at Westheimer.
Very good.
And that's right near the Tower Theater, if you're not familiar with it. Well, what's really important, though, is that a lot of us who've moved here to Houston, or maybe some of you that are younger, don't really realize the rich history that Houston has. And that really goes into the GLBT community, because there's a lot of stuff that was done here in Houston that was done a little bit different than other cities, or that was not even done anywhere else. I mean, the fact that this is a place where the sodomy law overturnment came from.
In 2003 Supreme Court case.
What was the case?
Yeah, it would be Lawrence versus Texas.
I'm testing you there. Yeah.
I hope to make the good grade. I hope to. Mitchell Kateen was actually a grand marshal, if I remember correctly. He was one of the local lawyers.
And we had the plaintiffs in the and we didn't know that until the last minute that they were going to be in the parade.
Because it was just a few days before that the case was announced.
Exactly. It was the Monday before the Saturday parade, and we were all like biting our fingernails waiting for when those cases were going to come out, because actually it was Thursday before the parade, I think, because usually the cases come out on Monday. But this one, because it was right at the end of the term, it was like Wednesday or Thursday, and the press came from all over the country to talk about this.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. I mean, if you walked around on the bar block, it was like the longest party just because of that.
We weren't criminals anymore.
Exactly.
So, and that was done here.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of history that happens here, including what you mentioned before, the election of the first Rice graduate mayor.
That's true. The very first mayor of Houston to be a graduate of Rice University.
But in all reality, I mean, she's made history. And in her inauguration speech, she said that, you know, the thing about the Rice graduate, but...
Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's gotten this kind of worldwide acclaim, I mean, she's been noted now as one of the 100 most influential people in the world, mm-hmm. as I recall from Time Magazine,
That's
I think
right.
they said it.
And she's our mayor.
Yeah.
And she's a great marshal. So...
Yeah. What more could you ask for?
Now, Arch is also meeting on Wednesday, correct?
Yes. This Wednesday, May 26th, we are having a public meeting in the Cultural Center at Montrose Counseling Center on the first floor, and that's 401 Brannard, for those of you who may not be familiar with the building. Our meeting will be at 6:30. And we'll be talking about a number of things. We've got some exciting developments to share. We like to have a regular time for everyone who's interested in preserving history. You don't have to be a member of an organization to come and participate. It is open to all. And one of the things that we were very excited to relay to people, actually, is the development of a new part of Houston Arch. We have a summer internship that Rice University has made available, and we'll be telling you more developments about that at that meeting on May 26th.
Okay. So that just sort of leads right into how Pride is happening in June. And what are some of the things that are going to be a little bit different or new? Or you talked a little bit about the parade being how the parade's going to go down, Westheimer?
Yeah, well, there's, given the magnitude of the event, the city recognized how large it was last year. And as compacted as, you know, this parade route has actually been narrowed down a little bit as far as the exact length, it doesn't reach as many blocks as it once had, so it's a little bit more compact now. So to give people a little bit more room to walk along the parade route so they don't actually walk on Westheimer, is the Friday night before, they'll actually be shutting down a lane, one lane going east, one lane going west, and that Saturday morning they'll actually be putting up barricades in the center of those lanes that are shut down. So it'll give people an extra about 5 feet of room to walk, so that people that are standing can actually stand on the street and people who are walking can still have access to the sidewalk.
Well, and not everybody realizes this, but you go to a lot of the other parades in town and there's not a lot of spectators there. The Pride Parade has like the second largest crowd in the city.
Right. Well, arguably, you know, one of the top two. You know, we fiercely debate, you know, if, you know, some years they say we're bigger than the rodeo. Some, most years probably the rodeo is a little bit bigger than us. But it's a strong statement, I think, for the city of Houston to have such a strong support from the community for the Pride Parade.
What was the attendance last year, roughly?
If you ask me, I'm going to give you the numbers from the city of Houston, and they say right around 150,000. But it's debatable amongst, you know, who you feel like asking and who's actually out there counting.
How can you count 150,000 people?
Well, if you count just by looking at the people who stake out places early in the day for prime real estate, people are out there early in the morning.
Last year we saw people the night before. Mm. We actually saw people in tents who were getting out there and you know, especially with this being the first Pride since Anise being elected mayor, we're anticipating on, if not the largest, one of the largest celebrations we've ever seen.
Truly a community celebration in honor of Anise's election.
Right.
Exciting.
Yeah. Historic, even.
So the festival, you have entertainment selected?
Yeah, the entertainment selected. Some great artists from all over the country, actually, from Florida, New York, and New Mexico, and we still have a large selection from right here in Houston. They'll be featured on the community stage, which would be right at the intersection of Yoakum and Lovett. That'll start right at 12 o'clock with the opening ceremonies from the believe Bayou City Performing Arts. We'll be performing the Pride Band, and then a special presentation to all the Grand Marshals from this year from the city of Houston this year. So it's starts up early for entertainment, and right on Westheimer, we'll have a DJ from 104 playing all day long.
And is it too late to get into the parade?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, it's sometimes it's never late to get into the parade. It, you know, it's but This year, there's still plenty of spots open. We do have a set maximum number that we do plan on reaching as far as what we see, foresee. That number is slowly shrinking as far as how many are available. You know, today we received about 4 or 5 applications. As you know, most of them come in June. You know, that seems to be the time that people get.
Oh, yeah. Pride.
Let's do a float.
Well, and people are a little bit spoiled because a lot of the other parades you can do at the last minute, like almost the day of. And what about the festival? Is there still room for organizations and or businesses to get to be part of the festival?
There's still quite a bit of room for organizations. We do have a maximum of 50 nonprofits that we allow in at the underwritten price of I want to say it's about $150, which includes all the setup, so it's a really good rate for them. And then the businesses are slowly dwindling down, and we looked at it today, and you know, less than 20 spots are open from what we
max
out at.
Everyone wants the gate on her.
And the festival is free to the public?
Festival is free to the public.
That's, I love that change because I think, you know, you did that a couple of years ago, and that just everyone just, you know, loves free entertainment and seeing people watching and everything.
Well, it's an important part because it's, you know, the LGBT community is so diverse in many different ways, and economic background is one of them. And a lot of the organizations that are in the festival are reaching out to the people who probably couldn't afford to get in there in the first place.
Right.
So it's really important for us to make sure that they have access to it, everything that they possibly can when they walk through the festival, so that they know who Montrose Counseling Center is, who AIDS Foundation Houston is. They may not have access to the internet, mm-hmm. May not have the ability to go down to the library on occasion for the internet. So, but they more than welcome to walk and witness firsthand and be able to communicate one-on-one with people.
And that'll really help the impact of the health tent, I imagine, which is trying to aim precisely at this group of people who might not otherwise get access to services.
Right, and the health pavilion is something that we're bringing back. Walgreens is on partner with that again this year, and they're actually bringing down, usually they don't have their buses, their screening buses in the south. They usually have in the south, they're up north, and north, you know, are in the winter, they're up down south, and then the summer, they're up north. But they're actually bringing one down, especially for this event, simply because it was such a great success last year, and they're offering free screenings all day long for people to go in there and get their blood tested. Whatever they need done, Walgreens is picking up that tab for them.
And what about volunteers? Do you have any volunteer opportunities available?
Oh, tons of volunteer opportunities available. We have... we counted the other day 236 available volunteer positions. Just about half of them are filled already, so there's still plenty of places. All that can be found at pridehouston.org. There's a fantastic place for people to click on and be able to scroll and see exactly what they want to do, what all is available, and sign up right there.
And when they want to volunteer, et cetera, et cetera.
All the
there.
Times, all that stuff is there. How they, what the shift is, what they'll actually be doing.
And
all
since
that.
We're gearing up to Pride time right now, can they drop into the office at a certain time?
Any time is. I usually schedule my meetings in the morning, so if I'm gone, it's going to be in the mornings. But a safe time for me to come in there is between 12 and 4. Of course, it is in the Counseling Center building, so we do recommend people just go up to the second floor and use their courtesy phone to call down to the Pride office. But okay. Someone will be there for sure.
So if somebody wants more information about Pride, how do they find that?
PrideHouston.org is the number one place to go to for all the information on not only Pride, but as well as the history exhibit as well.
Okay. And Brian, what about ARCH? The meeting?
The meeting again will be this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. on the first floor in the community center, the cultural center, at the Montrose Counseling Center at 401 Brannard.
And website for ARCH?
The website for ARCH is HoustonArch, one word, .pbworks.com. You can also just Google Houston ARCH. That might be easier for you.
Okay, great. So that's all happening, and get involved. And we want to thank you both for coming out tonight and talking about what's happening.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Go and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Ray Hill. This is radio station KPFT Houston. We're a listener-sponsored radio station, and we depend on our listeners to make contributions. I've been around here since 1968, and hell, we didn't get a transmitter until 1970. And I went on the air in 1975 with a gay show. In 1980, I started the prison show. Continuous broadcasting on public radio means that I frequently ask folks just like you to make contributions, tax-deductible contributions, to the radio station. And you can do that on this program. Listen for the number and give it a call.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1, Houston.
If you plan to call today or later this week to renew your membership, please consider increasing your contribution. As you've probably heard in the news, Congress has often considered slashing budgets for public interest services. As a result, federal funding for public radio may be reduced. That funding may even be eliminated. Though only a small percentage of KPFT's budget comes from federal funding, this funding crisis means that your contribution is more important now than ever. Please consider increasing your contribution if you can. Every dollar you contribute will make a big difference in the music and news you've come to appreciate from KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Pledge now. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
Well, it is your turn. It is your turn now to pick up the phone at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. This show is participatory. Now, usually you get to sit and listen to what we do, the interviews we do, what we talk about, what This Way Out does between news wrap and the feature segments they do, and the interviews that we do. We talk to people from the community about the community, what's going on. So usually you just sort of get to relax when you listen to Queer Voices, but tonight we're asking you to be active and be part of the solution of getting the word out about this community. And how this community gets the word out is through KPFT, both After Hours and Queer Voices on KPFT. Nowhere else, KPFT. And that's why we're asking you to call.
And we do not do this every week. This is maybe two or three times a year, and we have to pay the bills. We have 100,000 watts behind our voice in our show, and, brother, that is not cheap. So this is the time of the year where we have to get your support and your calling in and giving you your hard-earned dollars to support something that you believe in and that we believe in and that we volunteer for every week. And we hope that we are adding a community beacon or voice to those who may not get the word out otherwise. Once upon a time, we had a newspaper, but that has gone away. So we're kind of the weekly source of information outside of the Internet. And we invite people on, and we just had Pride and Houston Arch, which are wonderful community organizations, and I hope you enjoyed that interview. But if you did or if you didn't, you can still call in and pledge kpft.org online or 713-526-5738. Please make the phones ring. I don't think I've heard the phone ring yet. So we need to know that you're out there and you're listening and that you support gay radio in Houston.
So we're going to go to This Way Out now, but just one last chance. Call us now at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
I'm Ben Karen.
And I'm Evelyn Ortiz.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 22nd, 2010. A queer couple in Malawi who dared to publicly celebrate their love at an engagement party in late December was convicted this week of unnatural acts and gross indecency, and given the maximum sentence of 14 years in prison at hard labor. A traditional engagement ceremony is generally recognized as a civil marriage in Malawi. According to several reports, Judge Nakwawa Usiwa Usiwa told the men, "I will give you a scaring sentence so that the public be protected from people like you, so that we are not tempted to emulate this horrendous example." They were convicted under laws created during British colonial rule. 21-year-old Tuwanga Chimbalanga and 26-year-old Stephen Monjeza were twice denied bail, and they've been behind bars since their arrest 2 days after that party. They were involuntarily subjected to medical testing to determine if they'd had sex together, which Amnesty International called a violation of worldwide treaties prohibiting torture and cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. The Global Human Rights Group has officially adopted Chimbalanga and Monjeza as prisoners of conscience. The courtroom was packed with jeering spectators throughout the trial, and hundreds gathered outside to hurl insults at the couple during their arrivals and departures.
Giftra Pence of Malawi's Center for Development of People, which defends minority rights, said it was a sad day for his country. These laws are a foreign imposition, he added. They are not African. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, called the proceedings blatantly discriminatory. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley said that the United States was appalled by the census and called on Malawi's government to respect the human rights of all its citizens, while the British government also condemned the judgments. UK Minister for International Development Alan Duncan, who's gay, cautioned against using the considerable financial aid his and other Western nations provide to Malawi as a political weapon. In an op-ed he wrote for the Pink News website, Duncan said that they face a challenge just to survive, and we have a moral obligation to help them in their daily battle against hunger, disease, and despair. Lawyers for Chimbolanga and Mongeza say they'll appeal the convictions to Malawi's High Court. Australian activist Martine Delaney claimed in a web posting that Chimbolanga identifies, in fact, as a trans person and that the couple views theirs as an opposite-sex relationship.
Portugal's politically conservative president, Aníbal Cavaco Silva, this week signed the parliament's marriage equality bill, making his the sixth country in Europe to open the institution to same-gender couples. Cavaco Silva said he did so reluctantly, but the lawmakers had enough votes to override a veto. The legislation, however, denied adoption rights to same-gender couples. Portugal's parliament passed the socialist government-backed bill in January with the support of all of Portugal's left-of-center parties, who together have a majority. Elsewhere in Europe, same-gender couples can legally marry in Belgium, Norway, the Netherlands, Spain, and Sweden.
Authorities in Minsk, the capital of Belarus, banned the May 15th LGBT Pride Parade, but when a small group of people marched anyway, police attacked like a group of wild dogs and beat them, according to one activist blogging from the scene. In banning the march, city officials cited a national law that prohibits public events within 200 meters of subway stations and pedestrian tunnels. Activist Nikolai Alexeyev, who led a contingent from neighboring Russia, called the ban absurd, pointing out that there have been many marches and parades in the past using the same route. Other bloggers described the unfolding events via the UK Gay News website. For just 10 minutes, 40 Belarusians and Russians waved a 12 meters long rainbow flag for a short march of approximately 200 meters. They were at first met by a large group of journalists, photographers, and TV crews, but when they reached the first crossing point, they were trapped by several vans of anti-riot police. Suddenly, the doors of the vans opened and anti-riot officers ran towards the participants. They were brutal and violent. The march ended with most of the participants being arrested and violently beaten. A few managed to escape, but the police ran after them. Reports varied, but at least 12 marchers and 18 skinhead counter-protesters were detained. At least two Pride participants suffered injuries serious enough to require medical treatment while in custody.
To no one's surprise, Moscow's homophobic mayor Yuri Lushkov has banned the Pride march planned for the Russian capital on May 29th. It's the fifth consecutive year that the mayor, who's infamously described pride parades as satanic happenings, has issued a ban. Public safety has generally been cited as the reason, but activists call that a homophobic smokescreen. Activist Nikolai Alexeyev noted that, "We are ready to take all bans to the European Court of Human Rights, which this year is due to rule on the complaints lodged over the bans on the first three Moscow gay prides in 2006, 2007, and 2008. In previous years, small groups of activists have defied the ban, but they've often been met by violent protesters and arrests. Secretly planned flash mob events in recent years have eluded police, and organizers vow to conduct some form of pride action this year, too. Alexeyev reported late this week that Moscow authorities have blocked the gayrussia.ru website at the moment, he wrote, when many news sites, both in Russia and abroad, are giving direct links to the site concerning the ban of the fifth Moscow pride.
But an estimated 35,000 LGBT people and their allies celebrated Pride in the Belgian capital of Brussels on May 15th. Organizers said there were about 10,000 more people at this year's march through the historic civic center than last year. With national elections scheduled for June 13th, several socialist, green, and liberal party politicians joined the colorful procession.
and about 4,000 people, all wearing pink, converged on Hong Lim Park in conservative Singapore for Pink Dot 2010 to support LGBT people and their families. Activists and their non-gay allies celebrated in a carnival-like atmosphere that also featured cultural performances. Organizers said the crowd was larger than last year and that the event received primetime evening news coverage on local television for the first time. According to a report on Friday.com, viewers saw aerial views of a huge pink human dot. The record turnout makes Pink Dot 2010 the largest public gathering at Speaker's Corner, Singapore's only government-designated venue for public assembly and free speech where a police permit is not required. The inaugural Pink Dot event, held at the same venue last year, was attended by 2,500 people. Singapore continues to criminalize private consensual adult gay sex, although the law has not been enforced in many years. The Pink Dot 2010 date of May 15th, organizers said in a statement, was chosen to coincide with the International Day of Families, to raise awareness and foster deeper understanding of the basic human need to love and be loved regardless of one's sexual orientation.
The Reverend Canon Mary Glaspell, who had served in the Baltimore, Maryland diocese, was consecrated in Los Angeles on May 15 as the first openly lesbian bishop of the Episcopal Church. New Hampshire's Jean Robinson became the first openly gay bishop in 2003. The Episcopal Church is the U.S. wing of the Global Anglican Communion, a worldwide consortium of Christian congregations rooted in the Church of England. Robinson's ordination in 2003 inflamed an already simmering divide between scripturally conservative Anglican regions in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, and the more progressive Episcopalians and the Canadian Anglican branches. The Episcopal Church bowed to Anglican pressure following Robinson's ordination and agreed not to ordain any more gay bishops, but the church's governing body voted to revoke their voluntary ban last year. Several North American congregations have exacerbated that divide by blessing same-gender unions. In addition to the growing rift between North American and other Anglican regions, a small number of conservative Episcopal congregations have formed an alternative association in the U.S. The Reverend Canon Diane Bruce of San Clemente, California, was also ordained during the same May 15th ceremony. Their consecration made Glaspell and Bruce the first two female bishops in the 114-year history of the Diocese of Los Angeles. Many in traditional Anglican regions also oppose the ordination of women. Glaspell, who has been with her partner Becky Sander for 19 years, told a gathering of media the day before the ceremony that the church's willingness to ordain women and gays shows a commitment that goes beyond mere inclusive language. "We are being the church. We say we are," Glaspell said. "We're not just saying it, we're doing it, and there's something very powerful about that."
And finally, yet another right-wing U.S. Republican Family Values congressman was forced to resign this week following revelations that he'd been in an extramarital affair with a female staff member. According to the Human Rights Campaign, Representative Mark Souder of Indiana has consistently voted against every piece of LGBT-supportive legislation and increases in HIV/AIDS funding since he entered Congress in 1995. Television coverage of Souder's fall from grace has included excerpts from an in-house video interview with him extolling the virtues of abstinence-only sex education. It was conducted by the female staff member with whom he was having the affair.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 22, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Ben Caron.
And I'm Evelyn Ortiz.
We know you can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to KPFT.org or call 713 713- 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT right now. Continuing to meet your expectations, KPFT depends on your financial support. Contributing listeners provide over 90% of KPFT's funding. So please take a moment right now and make a gift to KPFT at 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston. Listener contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need your pledge. You make a huge difference in this radio station when you pledge to KPFT. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Call and make your tax-deductible contribution today. You can also pledge online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
There's disturbing late news out of Zimbabwe this week, and a lesbian activist we met last week is right in the middle of it. She'll join us again later in the program.
This year, I will work with Congress and our military to finally repeal the law that denies gay Americans the right to serve the country they love because of who they are. It's the right thing to do.
U.S. President Barack Obama, during the first annual State of the Union address of his administration on January 27th, Defense Secretary Robert Gates supported repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy during congressional testimony in February and announced a study to plan implementation of the change. In late April, however, Gates sent a letter to the House Armed Services Committee urging that no legislative action be taken until the Pentagon issues its report at the end of the year. A White House statement backed up the Defense Secretary's letter. Queer activists have increasingly pushed for repeal this year. There's widespread concern that the November midterm elections may reduce the number of supportive lawmakers in Congress. Others simply want Barack Obama and his Democratic Party to honor their campaign promises to the LGBT community. Democratic House Armed Services Committee Chairman Ike Skelton of Missouri wants to keep Don't Ask, Don't Tell in place. He said this week that repeal language would not be included in his panel's upcoming consideration of the annual National Defense Authorization Act. That's the legislation most have said should be used for repeal because the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was instituted in the same annual spending bill in 1993. The best chances for repeal may begin in the Senate Armed Services Committee, where supportive Chair Carl Levin of Michigan continues to push for the necessary votes. And despite Committee Chair Ike Skelton's opposition, repeal could be brought up for a debate on the floor of the House. Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, was also targeted by activists this week, including a rally by several hundred people outside Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office in San Francisco. Federal legislation banning workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity has been another unfulfilled promise of President Barack Obama and his party. There was a disappointing turnout at an ENDA rally in Washington, D.C. this week, but a press conference by leading national LGBT advocacy groups got some media attention. 13 activists were arrested during a peaceful sit-in in the Chicago District Office of Illinois Senator Dick Durbin. They praised the Democratic Party whip for co-sponsoring ENDA, but criticized Durbin for not taking a more active role to secure its passage. Executive Director Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and some of her staff members provided this tutorial during the San Francisco rally on why ENDA needs to become the law of the land, and soon.
Hey, everybody. I'm here with Josh Delgado, who is legal assistant at the National Center for Lesbian Rights. And it may be obvious that Josh would know the answer to this, but maybe you don't all know the answer. Why do we want to pass ENDA?
To stop discrimination for sexual orientation and gender identity.
And how many states can you be fired from for being gay?
I know.
Gender?
I'm a staff attorney at NCLR. In 29 states, you can be fired based on your sexual orientation, and in 38 states, you can be fired just because of your gender identity.
That means for no reason other than your sexual orientation or your gender identity, your boss can say to you, pack your stuff, you're out of here. You put a picture of your partner on your desk, you can be fired from that. In 29 states! Not okay! 38 states! If you're a transgender identified person, you can be fired. People should be able to have the opportunity to make a living and feed their family and have a roof over their head and put food on their table and not be fired based on who they are. That's why we need ENDA. So Nancy Pelosi, we love you. We know you love us. We know you care about ENDA. We're here to say, pass ENDA now. Pass ENDA now. Pass ENDA now. Pass ENDA now.
According to several media reports, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told a conference call with representatives of several national queer advocacy groups this week that both Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal and the passage of ENDA this year are still her goals. It remains to be seen if the Obama campaign chant of Yes, We Can will become nothing more than a hollow memory.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
When police raided the headquarters of Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe on May 21st, the difficult struggle we heard about last time on This Way Out got even harder. Two GALS employees were arrested in the operation led by Chief Superintendent Peter Magwenzi, who was recently implicated in the illegal detention and torture of other social activists. At last report, attorneys from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights have been unable to see the jailed Ellen Chalimana and Ignatius Muhambi. Authorities were not even swayed by concerns for diabetic Chalimana's health. No one is sure how much information was included in the computers and documents that were seized under the search warrant for dangerous drugs and pornography. GALS representatives who are out of the country at various meetings are being warned not to return as more arrests are expected. Wherever she is now, Fadzai Mufarutsa is certainly a potential target. In part one of her interview with SW Radio Africa's Violet Gonda, the GALS Programs Manager for Gender talked about her organization's efforts to stamp out the practice of corrective rape.
It is rape. And putting a term like corrective in front of it or curative before the word rape is in some way desensitizing the kind of violations or the kind of violence that lesbians or men, gay men, experience.
From fighting the bizarre notion that forced sex acts can change a person's orientation to arguing for protections in Zimbabwe's new constitution, GALS is facing one of the most challenging fronts in the international LGBT movement. Mufarutsa may not have expected such a dramatic shift in GALS' already precarious situation when she answered Gonda's next question.
Have you had any problems as an association working in Zimbabwe because of, you know, the whole stigma that surrounds the issue of homosexuality?
Well, obviously, it's difficult working in certain spaces because once you stand up and introduce yourself to someone who's coming from Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, then automatically people will already start withdrawing from you. But in as far as our work around human rights in Zimbabwe has been, we have had quite a positive response in our working relations with our partners. And I think the only challenges that come into the work that we do is the statements that are made by people who are in positions of leadership. Those homophobic statements by state leaders are what I think will be a challenge to us.
Right, and you know, some of the responses that we've been getting from people include this submission from one of our listeners saying that people are entitled to their own opinion about this issue, But the fact that homosexuals are being abused and victimized makes these people, the people who are doing this, guilty. Now, to what role is the police playing here, if at all?
You see, when we talk about rights for gay people, I think this is one of the things that we try and talk about as often as we possibly can, the issue of law enforcement agents and why it is that gay people are asking for rights anyway. And what rights is it that gay people are asking for? We're not asking for anything that's special because we are born with our rights as human beings. But what happens is that when you come out as being gay, then you lose a lot of those rights by virtue of your sexual orientation. And one of the things that happens is that if you experience any kind of violence, violations, or any kind of abuse, particularly relating to your sexual orientation, if you go and report that matter to the police, they either don't take any action, they ridicule you, you're paraded in front of anyone or everyone who's at that police station, you're bribed oftentimes, or you're arrested. So what kind of justice am I getting as a gay, lesbian, bisexual person in Zimbabwe after I've experienced violence? And those are the things that we're talking about. The police sometimes will act, not that often. I'm sure out of 100 cases, we can maybe highlight 2 that have been acted upon. Other than that, they really don't serve the citizens as a full category. The selected citizens will be assisted, and other citizens won't be assisted. And gay and lesbian people are amongst those people who aren't assisted by law enforcement agents in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm. You know, for the benefit of those people who are still, you know, for lack of a better word, ignorant about the issues of minority rights, what are you asking for exactly in terms of rights?
Okay. So, if you look at any minority group that is stigmatized or discriminated against in any society, they are unable to access a lot of things. Or if they do access those things, they experience stigma or some kind of discrimination in how those services are delivered to them. So, for example, we look at, let's say, the right to health. The right to health is something that's very big in its definition. As human beings, we all have the right to the highest attainable health, right? The highest attainable health to me means that I can go to my clinic and say, I would like to get treatment for an STI that I have, and my partner, who is a female, would also like to get treatment for that same STI. But that doesn't happen in Zimbabwe. I can't go into a clinic and do that because, like I said, exactly the same situation with the law enforcement agents, you will get ridiculed. And that means that I'm unable to now go to a practitioner and ask for assistance. So what does that mean about my right? I cannot access it. That is one thing. You look at the right to housing, for example. If someone finds out that I'm gay and I'm lodging at their house, the chances of me getting kicked out without the due procedures being taken into consideration are very high. I can't go and challenge those because in any kind of court or in any kind of civil court, people will actually look at my sexual orientation before they look at the case that's before them, and then it gets mishandled. The right to education. My parents will kick me out of, will stop paying my school fees only because I'm gay or lesbian, or my sexual orientation is different from that one of someone who's heterosexual. So my education becomes a problem. I don't have an education. I could go on. The list is long, and I could highlight all of them in exactly that way. And that's why we're saying that we want gay and lesbian rights to be considered and to be put. It's actually not, we're not calling for gay rights. What it is that we're calling for as girls is non-discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. I do not want to be discriminated by law enforcement agents, by health practitioners, by educational institutions, by the judiciary system, based on my sexual orientation. I understand how people feel about homosexuality. And I'll say I understand because it's difficult to think about something that you're not used to, something that is out of the norm for you. But I think as a nation and as a people, a race of humans, we need to talk about issues of tolerance, issues of dignity, and issues of human rights. Because if you violate my rights, right, this is me, and this is me today. Tomorrow someone else will violate your rights, And it's a circle that continues to manifest itself in our societies where we take from a group of people without realizing that we're taking from ourselves and from each other. And if we continue taking the way that we're taking away people's liberties, people's freedoms, and people's rights, we will wake up tomorrow and find all of us with nothing. And I think it's something that we need to think about. It's not that we want people to accept who and what we are, but to try and think about tolerance and what tolerance means and what dignity means and what human value means. Because people throw around things like morality and values and things like that without really starting to think about what it really, really, really means. You know, and particularly people who talk about it from an African context. I'm from Africa. I know an African context. And our African context is about loving each other as a nation, you know, respecting each other. And yet we throw around homosexuality as being immoral and people who are gay not deserving of rights. I don't understand where that kind of talk comes from, but it's the kind of language that we seem to have acquired over the years, the language of hate. And we need to find a way of dealing with that kind of hate that we have, because it will manifest itself in our societies. I know a lot of people use religion as their argument for why homosexuality should not change. And quite difficult to talk about religion and homosexuality in that way and just isolate it like that, because we're all created in the image of the Maker. We're all created in God's image. And who are we as individuals, as human beings, to judge who is created in God's image and who isn't? And for goodness sake, to use the Bible was used during the slave trade, the Bible was used during apartheid, the Bible was used during the Nazi time, the Bible was used during the Crusades, and really that was all slaughter of people, right? So what is it we're talking about? You know, from what I know, the Bible talks about love. We are all created by one Maker, in the image of that Maker. And who are you to say that I'm not created in my Maker's image? Have you not taken over God's position?
Fazai Muparutsa is the program's manager for gender of the organization Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe. She was interviewed by Violet Ganda on her SW Radio Africa hot seat. We have updates on the...
What converts a KPFT listener into a contributor? One reason is a deep concern about community. Many people who give tell us that yes, having KPFT available is personally important, but equally important is making sure that anyone in the area has access to news and music programs that deliver more than just sound bites. That anyone has access to thoughtful discussion programs. That anyone has access to radio that is free of commercial influence. As you consider whether to give to KPFT, think beyond the value you receive. Think about the value KPFT delivers to the community. Think about how your gift, right now, makes it possible for anyone to discover and benefit from KPFT. Then please, become a new member of KPFT. The process takes just a few minutes of your time, and you're not only doing something good for you, you're doing something good for the entire community. Please call 713-526-5738 right now, and give as generously as you can. That's 713-526-KPFT. Thank you.
The magic word is community, and that's what KPFT, it is about community. We're community radio. Community is what we do here on Queer Voices, because we're all about the community, talking about what's going on, what organizations are working. Sometimes we talk a little bit about sort of strange businesses, like we did that interview about the store that was the movies, and because those are pretty much gone, you know, those rental places. But mostly we focus on things about what's going on in the community, the organizations. I mean, last week we talked about the HRC dinner, and I know most of you couldn't probably afford it. I couldn't afford it. But we talked about the dinner. And certainly it was a historical thing because Anise was there. The mayor of the city was there. We're asking you to become part of our community. Become part of this strange experiment that's been going on for 40 years, and we've struggled a lot, we continue to struggle, but somehow we keep making it through because of your dedication to this station. This is the station that's dedicated to you, to the GLBT community, to so many other communities that you wouldn't hear stuff. I mean, sometimes it's just so crazy what goes on. I mean, the textbook thing going on in Austin. The fact that here in 2010, we're still talking about the fact that these textbooks are going to forget about the important history that happened in this state, that many communities are just totally forgotten about, and they just think they can do this. Well, maybe we can't change that, but at least we can let people know. That made national news. But you listeners of KPFT know we've been talking about that for like the past 10 or 15 years, that the State Board of Education was doing these crazy things like that. We still do crazy things in this community, and it's still a struggle to try to make things right. We don't always win, but we're still trying to change it. It's about creating change. Social justice, those type of items that you don't hear on the commercial radio. I went to this really, really interesting seminar last week about the underground press, and three radio stations were mentioned. KTRH, because it used to be the news talk station and it used to be somewhat good. There was an FM station that used to actually do some good news, a commercial station. But the one that they talked about the most was KPFT, because we're community radio. And we were part of that underground movement that helped change a lot of things here in Houston. And we still struggle to make that change. So we're asking you to pick up the phone and call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, or go to the web, kpft.org.
And we do have someone to thank. Gabrielle called in and pledged $25 and put that onto her Visa card, which, of course, you can do. You can call in and put your pledge on Visa, MasterCard, EFT, however you want to do it. Or you can just show up at the door with a bag of cash. However, I don't actually recommend you do that, but it has been done. So we need to continue with Queer Voices. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
A glimpse of stocking was a look on to something shocking. But now God knows anything goes. Good offers too, who once knew better words, now only use four letter words. Writing prose, anything goes. If driving fast cars you like, if low bars you like, if old hymns you like, if bare limbs you like, if Mae West you like, or me undressed you like, why nobody will oppose. When every night the set that's smart is intruding at nudist parties in studio, anything goes.
That's Cole Porter writing and singing the title song from his hit 1934 musical, Anything Goes. And that may have been the feeling of much of the public when he wrote it. If you look at the nightclub culture in the country's major cities at that time, openly gay performers experienced a surge in popularity, so much so that the phenomenon became known as the pansy craze. This is J.D. Doyle, and on this edition of Queer Music Heritage, I'm going to hold your hand and take you through that world. Don't worry, it'll be fine. My approach is that while there are lots of references on the internet about the pansy craze and mentioning the performers who shared the spotlight, there's no good place to actually hear them. So this show will be a resource for that. The term pansy craze was taken, of course, from the common slang for flamboyant gay men as being pansies. And before I give you any more history of the craze itself, I want to get right into the music, and I'm starting at the very beginning. Most references cite the pansy craze as spanning the late 20s through the early 30s. Of course, there were gray areas before and after. An early figure often mentioned is Bert Savoy. He was a drag performer and was one of the first who was overtly homosexual in his act. It's been said that he was pure camp on and off stage. It's also been widely said that Mae West patterned her own stage persona after Bert Savoy, and one of his catchphrases, "You must come over," was morphed by her into "Come up and see me sometime." Savoy's partner on stage was Jay Brannon, and we're lucky to have this very rare recording capturing their act. Like all of the recordings on this show, they naturally come from 78 RPM records, so please be forgiving on the sound quality. From 1923, here's Savoy and Brannon with "You Must Come Over," the catchphrase of their act.
You know, I met a fellow friend of yours this morning.
How dare you talk to me? Why, the IGS haven't given you the least bit of encouragement. Why, girl, ain't safe in the street after 3 or 4 in the morning.
Well, would you like to go for an automobile ride?
No.
No?
I'm just walking home from one.
Say, before we go any further, tell me, are you married or single or what is it?
Oh. I'm not married anymore. I'm not married. It takes up so much time. I'm not married. You must come over.
Yes, but you have been married, because I remember reading of your divorce.
Well, I'm not the only one that ever got a divorce. I just had to get a divorce. The caveman stuff don't go for me, dearie. Floors were made to walk on, not to be dragged over.
Yes, but it didn't last very long, did it?
Well, I was living from May to September. I don't see how people can say that. I was living from May to September.
And then some other woman took them away from you.
Why do I care? I had the use of them all summer.
Well, who got the divorce? You or the husband?
I don't know. I don't know. I think the neighbors paid for it.
I mean, did you win the case?
No, I was so excited I lost the case.
I heard that you got panicky and spaced.
Is it any wonder what they said about me? I'm screaming.
Why, what do you mean?
I didn't know there were so many witnesses in the world.
Why, what do you mean by that?
Oh, the judge asked me if my husband was in the city. I was in panic. The judge asked me if my husband was in the city.
And what did you tell him?
I, like a fool, said some of them.
Well, listen, didn't your friend Margie get into some trouble up there on 65th Street?
Wasn't that terrible? Wasn't that awful?
What was?
Everybody in that building lost something. Everybody in the apartment lost something.
Well, did they suspect her?
I say nothing. My lips are sealed. The poor knife didn't arrest me.
No, don't come.
And I'll never forget if I live behind it, she got in front of the judge.
What was that?
The judge asked Margie if she was a defendant. He asked her if she was a defendant.
Yes, go on.
I didn't know the wagon could hold so many.
Oh, please.
Margie says, let me in first. Last time I had a stand.
Go on. The judge asked her if she was the defendant. And what did she say?
Margie, no. I'm the woman that stole the stuff.
You know, I met her on the street the other day, and she's going to the dentist. Says she's going to have a plate put in her mouth. She's
going to have a plate put in her mouth?
Uh-huh.
It's big enough for a platter.
I know, but she'd be a nice-looking girl if it wasn't for her teeth.
Is it too bad? Poor mom, she's always going to dentists.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget one time I went to the dentist with her, and the dentist gave her gas.
Yes.
And when he gave Margie gas, she started to sing. She started to sing.
Go on, what did she sing?
Margie started to sing. The Yanks. They're coming.
That was from 1923, and that same year, Bert Savoy was killed when he was struck by lightning. So that is all we have of his act. This next artist I'm perhaps taking liberties at including, as he was from the UK, but he did benefit from the pansy craze by having very successful engagements in New York in 1931. He's Douglas Bing, and he was famous for his pantomime drag act and for his songs full of sexual innuendos and double entendres. He was prolific at recording and performed into his late 80s. Here are two from him from 1928, starting with "The Sunday School Has Done a Lot for Me."
Now ever since my girlhood I've been warned against the flesh, lest naughty Mr. Nephi should ensnare us in his mesh. We are two that virtues all our blessings sent to conquer sin, but I somehow got my rations with a bit of vice thrown in. Oh, you learn a lot of things at Sunday school that you never learn on mother's knee. they entreat you to observe each good rule and shower love on all humanity. So if perchance they see a young man lurking near my flat, just like the five wise virgins, I'm prepared for things like that. I've a nightlight by my bedside, yes, and welcome on the mat. Oh, the Sunday school has done a lot for me. My early scripture lessons left me very quick and keen. My teacher put me in a class with boys of quite 14. We read Pilgrim's Progress and observed each golden rule. But I progressed so quickly, I had to leave the school. Oh, you learn a lot of things at Sunday school that you never learn on mother's knee. But like Eve, I disobeyed the golden rule and plucked an apple from the tempting tree. It was at the village school treat, I was full of girlish fun, but I somehow got too friendly with the vicar's eldest son. I fell over in the tug of war and lost my current bun. Oh, the Sunday school has done a lot for me. Oh, learn a lot of things at Sunday school that you never learn on mother's knee. So once again I read the golden rule and sought the bosom of my family. In the days of Pharaoh's daughter, folks were much more meek and mild. But nowadays one's parents aren't so easily beguiled. You can't come home from the bulrushes and say you found a child. Oh, the Sunday school has done a lot for me.
We are most ravine, we've a limousine, and the dainty maids are net in gold as green. Always live and gay, like the flowers in May. We are starring in the London cabaret. We're the big sensation of the show, and the managers all adore us, so you ought to know. We're the boys, the cabaret boys. We're the leaving London nightclub's only joys. Although our songs are always on the bright side, on Saturday night we're always just a trifle on the tight side. Tom comes out of the bar when he hears our music on the orchestra. We started to pop the music halls with dear old Dad, and though we were put on first, we didn't do so bad. Till we saw a couple of strong men and we both went mad. We're the nightclub joys, the cabaret boys. We've got lots of cheek and a baby peek, and we get a notice in the press each week. It's so hard to choose what we're going to lose just to get our photos in the evening news. Beauty creams we often advertise, and also a lot of dental things that no one buys. We're the boys, the cabaret boys. We're the leading London nightclub's only joys. Although our songs are always on the bright side, on Saturday night we're always just a trifle on the tight side. We're fine at Christmas time as the wicked Ronald in the pantomime. We're right up against the fairy queen of starry nights, and though we are not supposed to sing and dance by rights, we should do a couple of high kicks if we burst our tights. We're the nightclub joys, the cabaret boys. We're the boys, the cabaret boys. We're the leading London nightclub's only joys. We soon shall be a national institution. We've been in the game for 60 years, oh what a constitution. Tra la 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 la, tra la 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 la. We've danced in the Russian ballet and in light review, but still there are lots of things we'd like to show to you. Oh, we wish we could dance in nothing like the fairies do. We're the nightclub joys, the cabaret boys.
And that last one is a favorite of mine by Douglas Bing. That time, obviously not done in drag. That was Cabaret Boys, a duet with Lance Lister. Let's get to a little history, and while we do that, in the background we're going to hear a mostly instrumental song called Nobody Lied. It's done by a band called Bailey's Lucky Seven, with kind of a jazz scatting in the middle by Cliff Edwards. I did not pick the song randomly. It was co-written by Carl Norman. He was a prominent drag artist of this period, known as the Creole Fashion Plate, and he was also identified as a pansy craze performer. His photo, usually both in and out of drag, can be found on the sheet music for quite a number of songs of that period. I know of at least 15 for him. This was not uncommon for drag performers, but Carl Norman, besides singing these songs, also wrote some of them. So while there are no recordings made by him, one of his songs was recorded by the band you're hearing. Okay, here are the questions you should want to know. What set the stage for the pansy craze to even happen, and what caused it to end? Now, we're looking at social history from 70 to 80 years ago, and I'm using as my guide George Chauncey's book, Gay New York. To get the nuances, you'll really need to read the book, and for this broadcast, I can, of course, just cover the main points. A lot of the story can be attributed to Prohibition, which was from 1920 to 1933. For the people who did not want to give up alcohol and nightlife, Prohibition created an underground subculture. And it was a culture that wanted to be entertained and was ready for the next novel acts. At least in New York City, the pansy craze seemed to follow by a few years the drag balls that were popular in Harlem in the 20s. As tolerance for homosexuality was fostered in such an atmosphere, more and more of the gay nightlife gravitated to Times Square. And as Times Square was seen as the crossroads of the world, clubgoers from all over experienced and helped spread the taste for these acts. Chalk it up to the curiosity of tourists. And this new acceptance also fostered the building of a gay community itself and the mixing of gay people of all economic groups and even gay and lesbian-owned bars. If you can sense dark clouds forming, you're right. A backlash had been brewing. To the extent that Prohibition was intended to legislate morality, it was, at least in New York City, instead encouraging the acceptance of diverse social elements, gays and lesbians included. It's time to mention Mae West again, as she could be said to have broken that camel's back. In 1927, 5 years before her first movie, she was already a force on Broadway, after staging a number of successful revues. She had a talent for attracting attention. The year before, she had written, produced, and directed a show called Sex, which did good box office, but city officials raided the theater and prosecuted her on morals charges. Her next show suffered even worse fate. It was called The Drag and dealt with homosexuality. It did not make it past out-of-town tryouts because a state law was quickly amended to ban any play from, quote, depicting or dealing with the subject of sex degeneracy or sex perversion. All right, time for a music break. And as I've been talking about Mae West, I picked a song very obviously done in her style, but by a man.
I believe that everyone in life should have a mission. Making people happy is the height of my ambition. When I get them happy, well, they stay in that condition. I have a system all my own. I've got a lot of what I've got. And what I've got's all mine. And I assure you I can cure you if you're feeling blue. Come up and see me sometime. I got a flat where you can hang your hat.
and I've got a brand new line. And maybe you would like me to explain it all to you. Come up and see me sometime. Come up tonight.
I think the paper said the moon will be bright.
They should have had it in the columns and all. Letters that tall. That you'd be falling for me. 'Cause I am free. And you appeal to me. But how could it be a crime? If you don't get my number, well, my number's in the book. Come up and see me sometime.
If that voice sounds familiar to you, it's because Cliff Edwards was the voice of Jiminy Cricket in Disney's Pinocchio and made famous the song When You Wish Upon a Star. I need to say I have no reason to believe he was gay, but for this show, that song was a natural. We left off with homosexuality banned from the Broadway stage, but that did not ban it from the nightclubs. This brings us to Gene Mallon, who many sources give credit for leading the pansy craze. Mallon had been successful doing drag since his teens, winning prizes and attention. In 1930, he was hired to star at a rather swanky uptown venue, the Club Abbey. He was only 22. What was novel is that he did not bring a drag act to the club, but instead performed in elegant men's clothing and brought with him the camp wit of the gay subculture. If he was heckled by men at the club, he knew how to cut them to shreds with his wit, to the delight of the crowd. And being a large man, he was also reportedly willing and more than able to hold his own in a fight. He was earning admiration for essentially being a professional pansy. For a time being, he became the top earner on Broadway. Success brings imitators, of course, and soon other clubs had their pansy acts, and at the end of 1930, there was even the opening of a nightclub calling itself the Pansy Club, hosted by Carl Norman. Other well-known female impersonators at this time and active at such venues were Frances Renault and Niles Marsh. Before I talk about other performers on this new scene, I want to follow Gene Mallon a bit further. In January of 1931, there was a gangland shooting at the Club Abbey. That spurred the police to mount a campaign against the pansy clubs and those featuring female impersonation. And within a few months, all were either shut down or featured other kinds of acts. Mallon moved his act to Boston, and then in the fall of 1932, to Hollywood, with even more success. There he appeared in at least two films, and hosted at the Club New Yorker, where Hollywood celebrities hobnobbed. There was also a recording of two songs done by Mallon in 1931, his only appearance on record. The first song you'll hear uses one of his famous quips, "I'd rather be Spanish than mannish." Being Spanish was apparently an in-joke for being gay in those days.
How do you do, my smart people? I am about to sing the song that I made famous at my nightclub. I also have my nightclub orchestra here with me, and as soon as the boys are ready, we'll begin. In fact, I think the boys are ready right now. Are you ready, boys?
Yes, Jeannie.
Please.
Yes, I am a Spaniard who's new. Oh, I'm a bull battler you never have met, and you never forget when you do.
Professional jealousy.
Each maiden is thrilled by one look at my pen. I'm handsome, I'm strong, I look just like a man.
Says you. Says me.
When I keep my mouth shut, there's room for a doubt. But when I start talking, the secret is out.
A pansy.
You're telling me.
'Cause I'm Spanish. I'm so Spanish.
to my Spanish. There's something about bulls that I cannot resist. I love to slap cows on the wrist. 'Cause I'm Spanish, I'm so Spanish. And I'd rather be Spanish than mannish. With picadors and matadors, I don't agree. The reason for this you can easily see. When they wave that red flag, I think they mean me. 'Cause I'm Spanish, but why bring that up? Oh, I'm Spanish.
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 Oh, tell us, water, I'm Spanish. If asked to fight cows, I would go on a strike. There's something about bulls that I like. 'Cause I'm Spanish.
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 If you're mannish, I'd rather be Spanish. I've fought many battles, as you probably guessed. Many of the bulls I have met by request.
And how?
And when I met those bulls, well, say, you know the rest. 'Cause I'm Spanish, why bring that up? Voila!
Folks, this is really one of the duckiest songs that I ever sang. And I hope you like it. When people look at me and say, why does that fellow act that way? It's influence prenatal.
Prenatal?
Yes, prenatal. That's slowly growing fatal. My father hoped I'd be a boy.
What a disappointment.
A girl, my mother cried. And you can see when they got me, they both were satisfied. As far as I'm concerned, this thing is breaking up my life. I don't know whether I should take a husband or a wife. If I merely had just masculine desires, or if I only had the yearnings of a femme, in me you must admit the mannish sex is well defined. But when I see a football game, God, I nearly lose my mind. When I get mad just like a man, I'll battle.
Sweet.
When I take my kimono off, they flee. I think I know the reason things are not exactly right. My mother tried to get to Jersey on that fatal night. Though 'twas on a ferry boat that I first saw the light. And that's what's the matter with me. My father thinks me, or if I only were the girl my mother craves. When I look into a mirror, a big strong man I find. But when I see a battleship, I can't make up my mind. I don't know whether I'm Mr., Mr., Mrs. I'm on the spot as you can plainly see. Before my birth, my mother had just flowers on her mind. The doctor who attended her was just so good and kind. And when he arrived, he brought the biggest pansy he could find. So that's what's the matter with me, that's all.
Gene Mallon and I'd Rather Be Spanish Than Mannish. And that's what's the matter with me. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
Listener contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need your pledge. You make a huge difference in this radio station when you pledge to KPFT. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Call and make your tax-deductible contribution today. You can also pledge online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston. Magazines, newspapers, cable television, the internet, all sources of news and information, and all cost money. KPFT costs money too, but unlike those other news sources, you get to decide whether you want to help pay for it and how much to contribute. It's unusual in the age of big corporate media to have a quality source of news and information that's paid for voluntarily, but that's one more way KPFT gives you more than you might expect. We can do it thanks to listeners who contribute their voluntary support every year. Please join them. Call 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org. Again, you can make your gift at kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Call now. This is commercial free, listener sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston. What converts a KPFT listener into a contributor? One reason is a deep concern about community. Many people who give tell us that, yes, having KPFT available is personally important. But equally important is making sure that anyone in the area has access to news and music programs that deliver more than just sound bites. That anyone has access to thoughtful discussion programs. That anyone has access to radio that is free of commercial influence. As you consider whether to give to KPFT, think beyond the value you receive. Think about the value KPFT delivers to the community. Think about how your gift, right now, makes it possible for anyone to discover and benefit from KPFT. Then please, become a new member of KPFT. The process takes just a few minutes of your time, and you're not only doing something good for you, you're doing something good for the entire community. Please call 713-526-5738 right now, and give as generously as you can. That's 713-526-KPFT. Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
Continuing our story, I next introduce you to Ray Bourbon, who I think holds the honor of being the most colorful, most prolific, and longest lasting of all these entertainers. He worked in silent films, did some vaudeville, and by the 30s was working full-time as a female impersonator. His recording career spanned some 30 years with numerous releases on 78, 45, and LP, far more than any other female impersonator. He toured continually for decades, and in the 40s, Mae West cast him in a couple of her productions, Catherine Was Great and Diamond Lil. In the 50s, he claimed he had had a sex change, and accordingly changed the spelling of his name from R-A-Y to R-A-E. But it was all hype, which he knew how to milk. One of his albums was even called Let Me Tell You About My Operation. In 1970, he was convicted of charges of being an accomplice to murder and sentenced at around age 75 to life in prison, where he died of a heart attack the next year. I did tell you he was colorful. But in the 30s, the pansy craze brought him engagements in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Miami, and Chicago, to name a few. There is so much to tell, but that skates over the surface. I'm bringing you two songs by him from 1936 and done in his sing-song way, a sort of recitation style that many of these artists use. Here is Ray Bourbon singing My First Piece and Gigolo.
Now when I was a child, it seems I was wild. And I wanted to play a piano. So my pa found a teacher, a marvelous teacher. His name was Professor Romanus. I liked my youthful teacher, you bet. He was so handsome and so tall. And it simply was grand when he played with one hand. But I liked my first piece best of all. My first piece? My very first piece. I was so young and so sentimental. It was hard. Very hard. But he was so patient and so gentle. Now, I've had many pieces since I was a girl. How many I'll never recall. But the first piece he gave me was 10 pages long. But I liked my first piece best of all. My first piece, my very first piece. I was so young and so sentimental. It was hard, very hard. Oh, but he was so patient and gentle. Now, I've had many pieces since I was a girl. How many I shall never recall. And we got along fine till he played 6-9 times. But I like my first piece best of all.
Now, my wife has got a boyfriend. I think they call it gigolo. And wherever she decides to be, the damn thing's sure to go. And why she raves about this boy is something I can't understand. Because the only thing he does for her is simply kiss her hand. I'm going mad, you might say, screwy. My domestic bliss has gone quite bluey. Now he lights a cigarette, he hooks up her dress. He's 6'3", and does she love his caress. Now I'm not a bit old-fashioned, and I rather like this new idea. And as far as her fidelity, oh, I have nothing to really fear. Of course, it's true he's very handsome. And it's true he's very tall. And I'm sure he has everything to make any woman fall. But from the wiles of woman's charms, I know he is quite free. For I found out the other night, he really goes for me. Now at night when we arrive at home after a dance or two, my wife begins disrobing, and he helps to do that, too. But he always keeps an eye on me to see if I'm in need. And whether I am or not, he helps with the most suggestive speed. Now, you can see this whole arrangement is just a wee bit queer. He likes my wife an awful lot. But he likes me more, I fear. And when I'm very tired and ready to go to bed, he politely says, good night to her. And sleeps with me instead. Now, this is getting rather serious, as you can see, of course. And the only logical solution would be a very, very quick divorce. Not because I'm jealous of my wife and this dear boy, because she only plays with him. As though he were a toy. And not because he loves me, though I know that this is true. But just the same, I'm getting a divorce. Because I love him, too.
Accompanying Ray Bourbon on piano on these and many of his releases was Bart Howard, who was gay himself and went on to fame later when he wrote the classic song, Fly Me to the Moon. You can classify the Pansy Craze performers roughly into two groups. Those who did and did not perform in drag. Bert Savoy, Douglas Bing, Carl Norman, and Ray Bourbon did it in drag. And, as I already mentioned, Gene Mallon was the first to dress in male clothing, performing as your perfect Pansy host. He was soon joined by others. Dwight Fisk was a classically trained pianist and was studying in Europe when Tallulah Bankhead discovered him and brought him to New York. There he soon became popular with his stories, that often ridiculed the very society circles he entertained. He had a long career, lasting until his death in the 50s, and releasing quite a number of 78s and albums and writing several books. Perhaps his most well-known piece is called Mrs. Pettibone, from 1933.
Mrs. Pettibone. Now it all happened in a little country town. At the Women's Guild were holding their annual Friday afternoon meeting. Miss Mary Alden's there, the 58-year-old president, virgin to the end, arose and said, "Girls, you remember last Friday we took up the subject of Manchuria? And the old Leighton Report, for this being the last Friday before New Year's, we're going to take up a subject very near your heart, but very rarely mentioned in this thriving community. Sex. And marriage. So I'm going to call on Mrs. Pettibone, who has buried three husbands, to tell us everything she knows." Now Mrs. Pettibone arose fair, fat and forty, with a twinkle. She was like that all day long. It was biological. She just couldn't help it. She said, "Ladies of the Guild and your distinguished president, Miss Mary Alden Fair, I'm sure you expect me to tell you far more than I know. But any information I can give you, I will give you with all my heart. As you all know, my first husband, Mr. Brown, had a club foot and was paralyzed in one leg. All I can say about our marital relations, they were lousy. Now, my second husband, Mr. Thayer, related to your dear, dear president, was an extraordinarily well-built man to look upon outside the home, but in the home, what a frost. He had a bad rash, an epileptic fit, and I never knew where I stood. That is, the guild, it was terrific. I buried him with nothing but a berth. But now I'm going to tell you something. Lend me your ears. My last husband, Mr. Pettibone, was a man in every sense of the word, as you all know too damn well. Oh, I'll never forget our wedding night. What a night. We went to Fall River and had a big fish dinner. Why, I will never know. Directly after dinner, he said, "Let's go upstairs." And I thought, oh, hell, I've done this so many times. So we went upstairs to a little room overlooking a lot of factories and the old Fall River line. As I stood there wondering why in hell I'd gotten into this mess, suddenly, without a word of warning, Mr. Pettibone popped out of his clothes and plunged into an old hot tub. Then he curled that mustache you all loved so well. Meanwhile, I peeked through the door and was not too displeased. And then, being an old-timer, I jumped into bed myself and said, "Come what may." When suddenly the bathroom door opened and out came Mr. Pettibone. Just as naked as a child and twice as cocky. And he came over to the bed and he clapped his hands and he kicked his heels. And he said, "And now, Mrs. Pettibone, if you please."
Dwight Fisk. Now, to me, Fisk did not have quite as much gay sensibility as the other artists, and certainly not as much as the artist closing the show, Bruce Fletcher. And I'll get to Fletcher in a moment, but I want to insert another Cole Porter song. You'll see the relevance in a few moments. Okay, first off, please do not think I'm classifying Cole Porter as part of the pansy craze. While he was gay, that was more of an open secret than part of an act, and indeed, he rarely performed his own work. He was one of this country's finest composers, and the recordings of him singing were more than likely not intended for release. Still, it's fun to hear him sing a song from one of his shows intended to be sung by a woman. Gertrude Lawrence sang The Physician in an original 1933 production, but here is Cole Porter doing it. and you'll see right away why I'm following it with a song by Bruce Fletcher.
Once I loved such a shattering physician, quite the best-looking doctor in the state. He looked after my physical condition, and his bedside manner was great. When I gaze up and see him there above me, looking less like a doctor than a Turk, I was tempted to whisper, "Do you love me? Or do you merely love your work?" He said my bronchial tubes were entrancing. My epiglottis filled him with glee. He simply loved my larynx and went wild about my pharynx. But he never said he loved me. He said my epidermis was darling and found my blood as blue as could be. He went through wild ecstatic when I showed him my lymphatic, but he never said he loved me. And though no doubt it was not very smart of me, I kept on a rack in my soul to figure out why he loved every part of me and yet not me as a whole. With my esophagus, he was ravished, enthusiastic to a degree. He said 'twas just enormous, my appendix vermiformis, but he never said he loved me. He said my cerebellum was brilliant, and my cerebrum far from NG. I know he thought a lot of my medulla oblongata, but he never said he loved me. He said my maxillaries were marvels, and found my sternum stunning to see. He did a double hurdle when I shook my pelvic girdle, but he never said he loved me. He seemed amused when he first made a test of me to further his medical art. Yet he refused when he fixed up the rest of me to cure that ache in my heart. I know he thought my pancreas perfect, and for my spleen was clean as could be. He said of all his sweeties, I had the sweetest diabetes. But he never said he loved me.
Hello? Medical arts? Medical arts? Is this the medical arts? Will you connect me with the operating room, please? Mm-hmm. The Salon de Surgerie. No, darling, that's not French. That's just an old, understood tongue that's come fluttering and hustling down through the ages like the rats from a Victorian coiffure. Oh, operating room, I wonder if you would inconvenience yourself and peek about under those sheets and see if you can find an old, dismantled T-model body. Mm-hmm. I believe she's having an appendectomy put on her first edition. Oh, how grand you found her. She's what? She's under ether. She's lying under ether. Well, ask him to get up for a moment and let her come to the phone. That girl was ever the one to think only of her own pleasure, and me with 6 nut-brown fruit-filled loaves scorching in my Dutch or fireless cooking oven. Hello, operating room? Well, don't be antiseptic about it. All I know about sterilization is what I need for the bare essentials of New York living in this germ-filled metropolis. All I know is what my doctor told me. My doctor. That masterful, medical, miracle man. My doctor, he's got the biggest practice in town. My doctor, he'll pick you up the minute you're down. Rich and poor, black and white, ring his bell all the day and night. Some folks faint at just the sight of my doctor. My doctor, his operation's really a joy. My doctor, with all his instruments you can toy. He's so big-hearted it's been known to pass. He'll say the treat's on me and give you gas. And then you get a piece of advice from my doctor. Why, he's so sanitary that this place is like a dairy where the milk of human kindness ever flows. His business keeps on growing, and he makes a splendid showing with his assets, which the whole town knows. Once upon his table, never yet has one been able to say no to any treatment he'll suggest. His smile is so contagious, and his fee is so outrageous that the size of it assures you of the best. He'll stick you with a needle just like that of Very Quick, which the Weekly call the very neatest trick. The size of his prescription quite belies human description. He's just as well as well for sick. And he's my doctor. Diplomas hang all over his wall. My doctor, his work is just as broad as it's tall. The Mayo brothers one time sent a spy to see his instrument. The spy said, "Ma, she's looking yet at my doctor. My doctor, his understanding really is huge, tremendous. My doctor, he keeps his nurses merely a stooge. His work is much more first than last rate. The ladies take it at a fast rate. And every man would like to cast aspersions on my doctor."
My Doctor by Bruz Fletcher. For those just hearing this show, Bruz was spelled B-R-U-Z, and I understand that was a family nickname, his real name being Stroughton J. Fletcher III. He also had a very colorful, though very short, career. One of my friends, Tyler Alpern, has literally written the book on Fletcher, having just published a comprehensive biography. According to Tyler, Fletcher was born into one of Indiana's wealthiest and most dysfunctional families. I'll skip to Fletcher landing in Hollywood, where in the mid-30s he began headlining at the Club Ballet. Originally booked for 2 weeks, the engagement lasted over 4 years, and that club was a frequent watering hole of Hollywood's who's who. As for Fletcher's act, I'll again quote his biography. "His songs have only a few direct, uncoded homosexual references, but can be described as sophisticated, energetic, witty, gossipy, campy, bitchy, cosmopolitan, body, in a single word, gay." You've already heard the amusing innuendo of My Doctor. This next song, one of the most well-known of his over 20 recordings, well illustrates the role of a bitchy society gossip. From 1937, She's My Most Intimate Friend.
She's my most intimate friend, and naturally I shan't say a word. It doesn't make a bit of difference to me what the papers are printed or what anyone's heard. I like her. Of course, I don't entirely approve of her killing her husband, but nevertheless, he was a logical person for her to kill, and she did do it nicely, we all must confess. She's never been mentally sound, you know. As a child, she had a murderous trend. I was with her when her brother fell in the well. Of course, I'd never admit it. She's my most intimate friend. Her mother was that sexy Amy Tittlemouse. You remember, we all found her rather queer. And her father is a manic depressive. Why, haven't you heard? He's been in San Quentin for over a year. So she comes by it naturally. She's such a pretty girl, too. I thought it was disgusting of that physician to feel compelled to tell everyone in the court about her incurable poisonous ivy condition. She had so many bows. I think he did it for an ad. A wretched trick to further his own end. He got every man in town for a patient. Of course, I knew it was true. She's my most intimate friend. And after all, I did try to defend her. I said she was drunk when she shot him. Why, she'd been drinking like crazy for days. She was blind. It's miraculous, really, that she got him. And dope. Lord, she has stuck herself with that needle. So many holes, front and back. If she had any inner radiance, she'd be a living tower of jewels. It's a shame for the tourist that her soul is so black. I like her. There isn't anybody in the world that could get me to say one thing about her. She's what she is, and of course she'll never mend. She's an intro-ultra-extrovert, but so what? She's my most intimate friend. I know she's diseased. I know she's insane. I know she can only be appeased with a lash and champagne. I know Wellesley fired her for her actions with the girls, and I know what inspired her to poison her mother. She wanted the pearls. I know all about the battalion that she left too weak to walk. And I know about the stallion. No, that was only talk. I know they call her house the Hutch and compare her to the rabbit. And I know exactly just how much black magic she does on the Sabbath. In fact,
I know a lot of things I could tell if I would, but a gossip I never will end. Wild horses couldn't drag one word from my mouth. After all, she's my most intimate friend.
By 1940, Fletcher had run into hard times. Police crackdowns on gay establishments had left him and many other gay performers out of work. It's theorized that led him to commit suicide in February of 1941, at age 34. I've got one more song by Bruce Fletcher to close the show, but I want to say that, of course, given this time frame, I was only able to touch the surface regarding the artist who starred in The Pansy Craze. On my website, I have an additional segment featuring more songs by many of the artists I've covered, along with others relevant to this story. I realize that, gee, there really is nowhere to hear these artists, so I want to gather many of them together to give you that opportunity. So, there'll be more by Fletcher and Fisk, Bing and Bourbon, along with Noel Coward and even some female artists. All that can be found at my site at www.queermusicheritage.com. And this is J.D. Doyle, and I thank you for listening. As I said, Bruce Fletcher is closing the show, and the last song is actually a song. While he's mostly known for his witty and bitchy recitations, he wrote an excellent song that, thanks to Francis Fay, has lived on. Fay included the Bruce Fletcher song Drunk with Love on her first album, and kept it going by including it on two more albums and making it a staple of her live act. The song got life again in 2006 when jazz artist Therese Janeco based a show on Frances Fay and made it the title track of her own award-winning album. But here's the original from 1937, Bruce Fletcher and Drunk with Love.
I've lost all my money, it's true. I've given up everything, really I've tried to do just the best that I knew. I'd never have thought this could happen to me, but it has, and I'm here for the whole world to see. I'm drunk. Drunk with love, my body aches. Just one shot, that's all it takes to make me cry and tell you why. I'm drunk, dead drunk with love. Rotten liquor, mostly gin, every place I stumble in, round and round, because I found she likes me drunk with love. Every morning I swear that I am going to try something new. Then I feel her lips, her hands, her hips. And I don't care what I do. Someday she'll walk out my door. I guess that's what doors are for. And when I slam it, she'll say, "Goddamn, just drunk with love."
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack at queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Listener contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.